real question before the court is what's the limiting principle on that? Like, at what point will the court balk and say, no, it's important that governments have the abilities to do things like manage their own workforces?
Well, in this case, Janus is arguing for his free speech rights, and the ACLU filing an amicus brief is usually on the side of free speech rights. Could you talk about your interpretation of why this case is so important and why the ACLU has stepped in?
Sure. So the ACLU is second to none in defending robustly First Amendment rights of free speech, association, and assembly, both people's rights to associate and to not associate as they see fit. Under decades of Supreme Court precedent, it doesn't violate anyone's First Amendment rights to be required to pay fair share fees in cases like this. And that's because under decades of precedent, the court has recognized that in public workplaces, it's not just the rights of individuals who don't want to associate, but also the rights of people who do. So there are multiple First Amendment issue, like interests, vital interests at stake. And what the court has done historically is try to balance those interests along with the government's interest in promoting labor peace by recognizing one union. And so in doing that, the court is balancing multiple First Amendment interests. And so individuals like Mark Janus, who don't want to associate with a union, simply don't have a First Amendment right not to to pay fair share fees. They do not to fund the ideological activities of a union, and that's what this compromise in Abood reflected, but not to pay for the types of services like grievance procedures that they benefit from and that the union is legally required to provide them. And so as the ACLU, we very much, we joined this case. We filed an amicus brief in this case to advocate for the proper resolution
Amanda,
of the First Amendment.
Amanda, we're going to leave it there and say thank you so much for helping us understand this case. Amanda Shaner, staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union. And that does it for our show. Today, we want to celebrate our 22nd anniversary. It's actually this month. It was last week, but there was too much news to do it then. You see our cake here, 22 years covering the movement's change. Changing America and the world. A huge thank you to all the people who've made Democracy Now! Possible through the years, our staff and volunteers, over 1,400 public radio and television stations around the world, especially our listeners and viewers. Don't forget, you can keep up with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Roku. Thank you, everyone, for supporting news with a heart, for helping us go to where the silence is. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Let's blow it out, Juan.
Hey, while we've got time, let me remind you that to mentor a child, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to call Save the Children toll-free at 1-877-BA-MENTOR.
A message brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
A few safety tips for motorists from the League of American Bicyclists. Make sure you safely pass bicycles. Give them 3 feet of passing room if you're driving a car, 6 if you're behind the wheel of a truck. And remember, bicyclists have the same rights as you do, so yield to them as you would any other vehicle. Visit BikeLeague.org for more safety tips. Whether you ride or drive, please share the road.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's just after 6 o'clock. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle. You going to say something, Kyle? Why?
I think I'm in the past.
Did I? Oh, I'm sorry. There. That's. Is it fixed now?
Yes.
Okay. You know, you should have just plotted through regardless of what you were hearing in your headphones.
You want to do radio today?
We listened to a different radio station while we're waiting for the show to begin. So Kyle was listening to, what is it, Hot FM?
WRX.
Okay, whatever. But we're here now. And we have to talk quicker because it's an abbreviated show. We just found out about this only a day or so ago. So it's kind of a surprise. But apparently there's a lacrosse game. Hopefully they're not as surprised as we are. Hopefully they had some time to plan for it. Yeah, so we only have 45 minutes. And I'd like to take phone calls. You think maybe we could do that?
631-632-2901.
Oh, God, Kyle. You know, from now on, you don't say the phone number. No, you are banned.
6920.
No, stop. Just please stop. Because all these people get phone calls whenever you say the random numbers like that. No. It's very easy.
51.
The last four numbers are WUSB, our call letters, for God's sake. It's not hard to remember. 631-632-WUSB. Now, if you don't have letters on your phone, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help you. In fact, I'm looking at a phone right now that doesn't have letters on the numbers.
Yeah.
So I know it happens, but I mean, there's probably an app or something that you could download and you can look at each number and see what letters it corresponds to.
The numeral number app?
That's one way you could do it. You could do that. You could ask people, like ask to borrow someone's phone, and what you do is you hold their phone up to your phone while you're dialing and just look at the corresponding letters that way. That's something. You could probably find an old newspaper that has maybe a picture of a telephone in it.
Well,
somewhere.
I don't want to distract, but you could also visualize the keypad in your head and try to decipher it from memory.
Well, yeah, you could. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, reinventing the phone, but you could just simply say, where would I put A if I was inventing the phone? Of course, you put A on the number one.
Yeah.
So that would be, how you would figure out where the letters are.
Yeah, and six is number three.
Something like that, yeah. We're making it harder than it has to be. Point is,
I didn't say a letter.
631-632-WUSB is our phone number. That's all you have to remember. Oh, and also 9872. I guess I could have just said that. 632-9872 also works.
631-632-WUSB.
No one's going to call us because we haven't even started talking about anything yet. This is the most unorganized I think we've ever been. How's your week been, Kyle?
My week?
Yeah, because that's all we care about.
I don't know anything. I just don't even. What do I have that I could possibly like elaborate on?
Really? Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, you know.
I was listening to the other station again. I didn't hear anything you said.
Oh yeah, is it drive time yet?
But it's past drive time. Actually, it's parking lot time now. So, yeah, it's we have to go fast because time is a fleeting. All right, so you did that this week, and I did something similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was fun. But
enough about us.
Enough about us. We're in the middle of a lot of things because we're planning a conference. I said planning a conference. The speech gets left behind. So all of our time is spent, on that. And also it's deadline week for the magazine, so there's a lot of time. And of course, you know, our Twitter is blowing up because we somehow got into this whole NRA controversy. Well, not somehow. We took a stand, I guess, is the best way to say it.
We joined a lot of businesses that are saying, look, we don't need to provide benefits for your affinity group.
Look, it's a simple thing, and it's unbelievable. I should read some of the responses that have been coming in because, wow, we've really we've made some people happy. We've made other people unhappy. All we did was stop using FedEx. And the reason we stopped using FedEx is because FedEx is giving a hefty discount to members of the NRA, National Rifle Association. And, it's something to give discounts to people. It's kind of like a reward. And in this day and age, a lot of people are feeling that rewarding the NRA is counterintuitive. It's not something good.
And the miscalculation is that that you are getting so much business from your benefits, your affiliation, and thank you to this organization that provides you so many customers. Well, the miscalculation is there are a lot of people who support businesses who don't support this affinity group.
Right, right. And there are also, here's the thing, FedEx released a statement yesterday. All these businesses, rental cars, airlines, you name it, have dropped their affiliation programs with the NRA because it's how the tide is turning right now. There's our Twitter feed blowing up more. It's been madness. I'm trying to keep it in the background because I've got work to do, but you're aware of all the pandemonium going on around you. There are all these groups that had benefit programs, but because of the way the NRA has responded to the shooting in Florida and to shootings in general and just to the gun culture in general, I think people are starting to realize, wow, you guys are the problem. You know, you're not the solution. You don't stand for the Second Amendment. You stand for yourselves. You stand for the I call them arms dealers now. Why call them gun manufacturers? They're arms dealers. And if you start calling them arms dealers, which how do you prove they are not? They are. That's what they deal in is arms. If you call them that, maybe something clicks then and we realize what we're actually doing. This isn't about protecting your home. This isn't about target shooting. This isn't about going hunting. No, it's about people collecting weapons of war that are used as such, and kids are getting their hands on them, and kids are dying as a result of this. And you know what? What's different this time is that kids are speaking out against it. And I am just so blown away by that. That is the most inspirational thing to come out of this, or to come out of anything in a long time, is when these high school kids stand up and say, no, we're not going to buy into this NRA crap anymore. This is what needs to be done. You will hear us. And maybe we can't vote today, but we can vote in November. And if we can't vote in November, we certainly can vote in 2020. And they will. And it's amazing. We never had this before. We never had this kind of an outpouring. And part of what we're doing is supporting that, because that is where people are heading. It's been a long time coming, you know. And in fact, we're putting out the Hacker Digest volume, 18 from 2001, a little later this week.
Yes.
What we do is we take every year, turn that into a volume, and we're slowly catching up and digitizing everything. And what we had there, we had an ongoing, debate with a lot of readers about guns, believe it or not, all based on one simple statement that gun prevalence in this country is a problem. Just saying something like that was enough to incur the wrath of countless readers. And these are our readers. You think that they're fairly progressive and enlightened, but still, back then, people were very angry about this kind of thing and thinking that any kind of criticism was tantamount to dismantling the Constitution, which is pretty much not at all what any of our kind, meaning hackers, stand for. Absolutely not. But things have changed. Now, things changed to get to that point in 2001, because if you went maybe 20, 30 years before that, nobody in their right mind would be doing the kinds of things they're doing now, as far as having semi-automatic weapons, assault rifles, that kind of thing. Nobody would have ever thought that was what the Founding Fathers had in mind or what the Constitution stood for. Because of positions that the NRA has taken, it's been distorted so that people actually believe that. We're getting people messaging us saying, why do you not support the Constitution? Simply because we say we can't do business with FedEx because they're rewarding the NRA. That is the same thing as us saying, yeah, the Constitution needs to be burned. It's insane, you know? It's not at all what we're talking about here. And at least we're talking about it. At least the dialogue has begun. It's always, this is not the time to talk about it. It's always, yeah, we're going to take it under advisement and nothing ever happens. This time we're not accepting that. This time we're not accepting the thoughts and prayers as the only solution, as the only thing you can do for a situation like this. This time people are fighting back. It's having an effect. Every single company, except it seems for FedEx, has dropped their affiliation. And since they are the ones saying that we're not going to let politics get in the way of what we charge to people. Well, you know, we asked them, so if the Klan had some more members and decided they wanted a discount program, you'd be happily doing business with them as well. That wouldn't be acceptable, you know? How about us? How about if every hacker in the world said, yeah, we're part of the hacker group, you know, just a random group that we'll make up, no charge to join. Say you're a hacker, you're in. All right, we want a 26% discount now. There's millions of us. What? We can't get that? You're afraid of political backlash? It's nonsense. What they're saying is utter nonsense. Of course, they take the respectfulness of the organization they're doing business with into account when they enter into a program with them. So the pressure has to be kept on. And I think, you know, at some point they will see reason. And, you know, we'll reconsider what we did then at that point. But for now, yeah, all right, that's the stand you want to take. You're entitled to take the stand. You certainly have that right. But we have the right to react to that.
Yeah, and I think this is the other form of voting in the long list of ways that students are inspired to be in action, and that is in the marketplace. They're already having quite an impact on the court of public opinion and the marketplace of ideas, and this is sort of a natural extension of that. Someone at some point said, hey, look at all of these companies that the NRA offers as a part of what you get as a member. You know, in other words, when you join, what benefits and who and how do those benefits manifest? And you know, this list then became something that represented companies that could step away, you know, in other words, not reward and be a part of the benefit of being in this organization. And I think that they're going to be motivated by the other businesses that are taking cues from this movement. I guess it's a movement, yeah, and
it's turning into one,
and it certainly is it's not a out of the realm possibility that FedEx comes around to the idea that you know, it's actually a lot cooler to be aligned with the companies who are not supporting this organization.
We'll see what they do. You know, they can do whatever they want, but there's other companies out there. The marketplace
matter.
Will decide.
Yeah,
but people should never be quelled. And I can't stand that. You hear this all the time. You hear it said to basketball players. You hear it said to actors. You hear it said to anybody who is not a politician. That you should just do what you do and stay out of politics. And we get it, too. You know, just stick to tech and stay out of politics. Well, first of all, politics is everywhere, just like tech is everywhere. Politics is everywhere. It affects everything.
Yeah.
So everybody has the obligation, as well as the right, to speak their mind, to give their opinion, whether, you know, you agree with them or not. And, you know, I assume the athletes will keep playing their games. The actors will keep being in films, and we'll keep doing tech stuff. But we're also going to say what's on our minds and express opinions, and we're going to listen to other people's opinions as well. I mean, what these kids are doing in Florida and throughout the nation now is simply incredible. It's so inspiring, and I don't recall, you know, back when I was a kid, people being that active, people being that interested, that engaged. That is a good thing. It needs to be celebrated. And, you know, I just hope that they don't lose faith in the system, because the system is certainly going to try to make them lose faith. I mean, they cannot get any legislature to take them seriously or to actually do something. But I think the more pressure they keep on, the more support they get is vital. But what we have to remember is this is their movement. They're the ones starting this. We cannot co-opt it. We cannot say, okay, guys, we have it from here. No, we listen to them. Even if they can't vote, these are the people saying something that is incredibly relevant. And remember, they're just kids. They will make mistakes. They will say things probably that, you know, don't stand up or maybe are politically incorrect or who knows. You know, we have to be open and forgiving and, above all, happy that we have this dialogue going on. And it's the most optimistic I've felt in a long time.
Yeah, they immediately were at odds with the politicians in these town halls, the Rubio confrontation.
Oh my God, did you see that last week?
I think the best attitude that I took away was that and along with the fact that, you know, it doesn't really matter what companies are or aren't, whatever, you know, you're on one or the other of the lists, but the point is they're taking names, and they said that. I think David Hogg said that, and they've just been remarkable in in calling out the politicians, especially specifically with regard to the amount of money individuals have been taking in compensation from the NRA, which is something I think we spoke about last week a little bit, and that is certainly carried through. And you know, it doesn't matter, but they're taking names, they're keeping track, and a lot of other people are, and businesses are joining in, and it was certainly a topic of discussion, I think, at the water cooler in our offices, among others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that CPAC happened right afterwards, because Republicans got to show their true face at that point about how uncaring they are about this kind of a thing, and about other things in general as well. You know, somebody mentioned a naturalization ceremony. You know, that's what happens when you become a citizen after being an immigrant. And the idea of a naturalization ceremony was booed. That was booed. Someone becoming a citizen. This is who these people are. They are horrible, terrible people. We have to get rid of them. We've been saying this for a while, but nobody is making the case better than they themselves. And having all this attention drawn to them after this horrible event, it really illustrated the point that, these guys, they're not going to help you. They're not going to do anything for you. And that extends beyond high school students. Believe me, it extends to people in every walk of life. If you think your interests are being looked out for, they're not. The wool is being pulled over your eyes. And you just have to pay attention to what's going on, to see who's getting the benefits from the tax cuts, to see who's getting preferred housing, who's able to send their kids to a decent college, you know, who's on the precipice of bankruptcy, and who is it that is able to screw people over and get away with it. You know, there's just so many examples. We don't have time for all of them. It's you just have to pay attention.
Yeah, I would talk illness. I would talk species of animals or tracts of wilderness. And I mean, there's just pick an issue. It's been all about looking out for themselves. Mm-hmm. Whether it's gun organization or administration, it's really I think about selfishness.
I broached the subject on Twitter, actually, on my account, about having a sensible gun organization, you know, an NRA that isn't the NRA, something that basically stands for training of people with guns, regulation, sensible regulation. You know, not having weapons of war in the hands of civilians, things like that, and also supporting the right, as the Constitution says, to bear arms under certain circumstances. You know, well-regulated militia and all that. What this country basically had been saying for almost 200 years before we started going crazy. And I think, you know, an organization like that would actually represent most gun owners, and nobody has actually come forward and done that. In fact, I'm told there are groups that make the NRA seem sane because I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how many more steps in that direction you can take. But apparently there are people who do that and they get all the attention. But I maintain there are a lot more sane people out there. People ask, you know, these high school kids, where'd they come from? They're so articulate and amazing. You know what? They are the norm. We know high school kids here and in New York that are every bit as articulate, every bit as impassioned, every bit as on top of what's going on in the world and in the nation. This is a good thing. This is what we have, and we need to listen to it. It doesn't matter if we're talking inner city or out in the suburbs. Kids are paying attention, all right? And we need to pay attention to them and listen to their concerns, what they have to say. And I think that is how we progress. That's how we get somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, there's young people that have quite a bit to deal with. And you would be amazed at just how brilliant they are. And those struggles and the environments that they're subjected to, or even, you know, just the off moment or you know, chance encounter with someone who brings a weapon in their environment and in their school or something like that. I mean, just to deal with that among all the other things, getting into schools or just staying in school, you know, keeping your grades up. I mean, those were, I think, the difficulties that we remember. But it's amazing how cogent and together young people are in the most unlikely places. But it's, as you said, the norm. It's all around you. I mean, these are not by any means exceptional students. I think any teacher, anybody that works with students, would back us up in saying that. I mean, it is really profoundly inspiring.
And, you know, regardless of how you feel about the issues, I would hope that you would support what they are doing as far as getting engaged, being part of the conversation, being impassioned about it, and then try to put yourself in their situation. You know, going through a terrible, horrifying, scary situation like what they went through less than 2 weeks ago, and ask yourself, would that change me, change my perspective on things? I think it would. I think most people, it would change you when you realize just how powerless you are. And, you know, this whole discussion that Trump is leading about arming teachers, which I knew was going to happen. I knew that was where we were going to wind up going at some point. But I think most of us are missing the bigger issue here, is that this is a distraction, because every moment we spend talking about whether you want your algebra teacher to be packing heat is a moment we're not talking about getting rid of AR-15s and equivalent, period, and the kinds of actual solutions that work. You know, we're not talking about that because we're talking about something ridiculous that's never going to happen because people are not going to allow that to happen. But, you know, you keep that up long enough and people tire of the subject and just eventually give up, and you never get to that point that you are almost at. So see it for what it is. It's not a real issue. It's a distraction. It's
red
a smoke
herring.
Screen. Yeah, it's not going to happen. We need to focus on what is the real solution here. And, you know, Scotland has seen that. Australia has seen that. It's weird. The leader of Australia was in Washington, D.C., standing next to Trump, and a reporter asked him, did you advise the president on ways that you can stop gun violence that has worked in Australia? And the best he could do, you know, and this is the guy that Trump yelled at, too, I think, on the phone, right, when he first took office.
Yeah.
The best he could do was, you know, we're not presumptuous to lecture other countries on how to solve their problems, and every country is different. But, you know, inside him, he wanted to say, I don't know what your problem is here in this country, but we figured it out pretty quickly. Too bad you can't do the same thing. I would like it if he said something like that. I really would. But, you know, you can't expect that on the world stage, unfortunately. The fact of the matter is, they did figure it out. And they have a pretty nice society there. They have their problems, certainly, as do we. But it's not a dictatorship. It's not totalitarian. And they don't have shootings all the time.
There are, I just wanted to add, there are groups that, like you suggest, that do training and safety and also promote updating, I think, and also just a lot more intelligent and technical look at actual gun laws in various states. I know Washington Ceasefire is very active, and I think Ceasefire itself is a organization that exists in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I'll make this deal with the country. You know, if we what.
We have to make them cool. I was just going to add, no, we should make a deal. We should.
Well, I'll make a personal deal. My personal deal is that I will fire a machine gun or a semi-automatic weapon or whatever. You know, I'll even learn the difference between the two, because to me it doesn't really matter if it's being fired at you how fast they're coming. But I will do that if the day comes when there is sensible gun control in this country. And I can say that because I know that guns will not be outlawed. You will be able to get access to them. But my access will come in a safe place, a firing range, for instance. In fact, I think that's really the only safe place you can fire something of that nature, unless you're in a war. And if a war comes, we'll have a different conversation. But, you know, I will go to a firing range. I've already done this once with different kinds of guns in the Netherlands. And when I did that, you know, I came out of there enlightened, saying, wow, I get it now. I understand. That feels really awesome to do that. It's cool. I would never want this in my house. and unfortunately, a lot of people don't get that second part. You know, they don't make that connection. They say, yeah, this is great. I want more. You know, you can have all the fun you want. It's just having it around your kids, having it in your home where someone else can find it, or having it where you can find it when you're in a dark mood. No, that's not what we need. It serves no purpose whatsoever. It doesn't keep you safer. There are very rare instances where it does. Yeah, and I will admit it does happen occasionally, but far more often it does not, and it makes things worse. So, you know, having access to the things you believe are important, such as a hunting rifle for hunting. You don't need to spray semi-automatic fire in the woods. You don't. I don't see any situation where that would be the case, unless there's White Walkers coming at you. I don't see that, and it doesn't even work on them.
So, yeah, it really, the assault rifles that are built up like this, that look like the M4, it seems mostly like a souvenir for vets.
You
like people,
the M4, you know what the M4
is? That's the
to
military
me, that
version.
Sounds like a highway or an
airplane.
Yeah, it is.
A German highway. No, the comparison, the AR-15 and the M4 are basically the same gun. One is military, one is the sort of civilian, you know, one that you can buy as a civilian. And it just seems like more of a, like a, you know, memorabilia from when you were in Iraq or something. Mm-hmm. Or just like, you know, those days when you get misty for, I don't know what, you know, being under siege somewhere. I mean, it's really about this obscene amount of firepower, and you know, all jokes aside, you know, it's really this just machismo, incredibly just so overpowered for densely populated areas and stuff like that. And then, you know, this attitude of like, well, you know, what if I need it in my safe place for the tyrannical government or whatever. I honestly don't think that, like, in those situations, you know, arguably, we're faced with it already. We've said that before.
Uh-huh.
But assuming that day is yet to come, I think all bets are off. I think you start running guns yourself. I mean, you think of any country that has been occupied or had a resistance or rebellion. They sort it out. People start figuring out where to get guns. They make tunnels. They do this stuff in Gaza and in other places, you know? And so it's, you know, all things are out the window at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just sort it out until we agree that we're at that point? And then that's where I feel like, you know, we don't need these replica, these like these souvenirs of war until maybe we get to that point of, you know, the resistance manufacturing weapons or whatever's going to happen in this yet to be determined date,
right,
of apocalypse. But until then, yeah, it's really way too much.
And, you know, I maintain that day is now. You know, we are under a tyrannical regime.
You've said.
And
yeah,
I'm ready to go. You know, what do I do now, NRA? What do I do now, you know, weapons enthusiasts? Tell me. But nobody will. Same way they won't say a word if it's a black guy that gets killed by cops who's legally carrying. They won't defend that person. It's basically a white supremacist agenda that the NRA backs. And, you know, that might sound extreme to say that, but look at the facts. They only support a certain type of person. And it's really gotten pretty ugly. We need to change things. Hey, we have phone lines. They're open. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. If you have anything to say on this, there is a local angle I just read about in our local newspaper. The village of Miller Place, just to the east of here, school authorities confirmed today they have assigned armed security personnel to each of the district's 4 schools, joining a handful of other Long Island systems that employ guards with weapons on their premises. 4 armed guards, all retired New York City police officers, took on their duties on Monday, joining 14 unarmed security staffers already employed by the 2,700 student district. You know, my school, Ward Melville, had 2,300 students when I went there. And do you know how many armed security guards we had? They have 4 in their district here and 14 unarmed security staff. We had none. None of any of that. We had a hall monitor who was a student, We had that.
Is this high school? Or
this is high school. This is all throughout. You know,
I think there was a parking lot security guard at our school.
We didn't need that. Now, what was different about us? Tell me, what was so different? The only difference was we didn't have this gun prevalence everywhere. We didn't have this obsession. We were in the same country under the same constitution. And you know, it's not like we were nonviolent people. We were violent people back then, too. So that didn't change. We played video games. We had violent movies. So, yeah, look at what's changed. And look at the solutions that the people who brought you that change have to the problems they created to make it even worse. You know? So the next step in the conversation, the next step is, okay, teachers have guns. Yeah, but you know what? They don't have guns like the AR-15. We need to give them AR-15s because otherwise they're outgunned. So what good is your algebra teacher packing heat if she's going to be outgunned by the guy bursting in the door? You know, she has to have something that is equal to or greater than that.
Well, that's the argument. That's the thing that the police went through. A lot of the situations where, well, this is sort of the argument with, you know, what protocols after Columbine, whether they should run in or out of the building or stay there, wait for backup, wait for the SWAT, all these kinds of procedural things when you're in this situation. And that was the situation, I think, in the 80s and 90s. Basically, a lot of the police had revolvers, and the drug cartels and other, unsavory types with guns were basically outgunning the regular policemen at the time. And then, of course, the militarization, all of those things occurred subsequently. It's the same kind of attitude with teachers. It's so funny, though, and that no, it's not funny, but the to me, and I think we've talked about this before, the natural reaction is offensive, that you have to shoot back. Like, you're not hearing about body armor. I mean, you're talking about reinforcing schools. I think that's the catch-all. We need to reinforce our schools.
Yeah, and turn them into prisons.
Yeah, it just sounds, every time someone says that, I think, like, just barbed wire and, like, concrete walls.
No, they're saying things like that. Concrete walls, no trees for people to hide behind, bars on the windows.
So you laugh and you know, have your moment of gallows humor, and then you say, oh, well, pretty soon we'll have bulletproof backpacks for the kids. Well, they already have them. It's a thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the way we think now, is that, like, you had to send little Polly off to school with her bulletproof Barbie backpack or whatever.
Okay, let's explore this. Since we're exploring all the absurd ideas, why not give every kid a bulletproof vest? Huh? How about that? What? Yeah. Too expensive? How much is too much to spend on our kids?
Well, and this was the other thing that came out of the conversation, is all the money we would spend on these offensive things or the special training, the bonuses for teachers.
Yeah.
Where is this money when we're talking about actual things that our children need? Maybe if they had opportunities, they would.
What, you mean sissy stuff like pencils and paper?
Like,
and
robot class.
Erasers.
I don't know. Yeah, glue sticks, you know, some glitter.
Uh-huh.
But no, maybe if they had opportunity and they felt maybe like their lives had any kind of purpose other than the military or God knows what else they won't get to do. You know, if there was something inspiring, maybe they wouldn't be spiraling in isolation and these rampant mental illnesses that we're to believe are the real problem.
Well, anyway, so Miller Place has four armed guards now. I just don't think that's the answer. I mean, it illustrates the problem, but it's not the answer. There should not be armed guards. There should not be metal detectors. There should not be any of this in our schools. The only real attack is to reduce the amount of weaponry that's easily available and look at how we got here and how we can stop this. It's not like other countries have the same problem, that they have the same entertainment we have, the same video games, and they're not even anti-gun, but they don't have this. So we need to not treat the wound as much as prevent the wound from developing in the first place. And we seem so averse to doing that. And we fool ourselves into saying that it's because our Constitution says something. It doesn't say what these people are telling you it says. It's madness, utter madness.
Well, it's all or nothing, and the sad thing, or the disturbing thing, is that it really should be a situation where we actually open it up and look at the subtleties, the nuance of it, and that, you know, any conversation at all is immediately it disqualifies the discussion, or actually looking at the nuance. You're just saying, okay, well, any discussion at all is a criticism. Well, it isn't, and that hearing only that in the critiques that are coming out now, I think is self-defeating, because you really you're going to get backlash from this, and it's going to be it's already really profound. And I think that, you know, the people interested in weapons that really understand, you know, would be on board. They would share in that. And it's really the prevalence of, like you said, the severely lethal kinds of rifles, which, you know, that is the nuance that won't actually be brought to bear. Like, we can't get to that discussion, and we really should, because it's that distinction that is killing people so quickly, and and just with such devastation. The wounds and succession of injury in such amount of time is so unforgiving, compared to like a pistol or something like that. And I just wonder, like, how many of these weapons do you think are in the state, or in Miller Place alone? Like, I mean, it's just too crazy to have that many of them in proximity to, you know, your neighbors and your friends. I don't feel like it's necessary. I don't think it's like gonna make us any safer as a community.
It does absolutely the opposite. And, you know, I think the best approach is how they did it in Australia, just have a buyback program. And, you know, let's inflate the price. Let's take the amount that we spend on gun injuries and gun fatalities and everything else that it costs our society every single year, and let's throw that into the buyback program, so that everybody who has one of these things right now can get rich. Yeah, let's let them profit. Hey, you invested in this thing, and now we want it from you because it's destroying our society. But you got to make a tidy profit, and you have this amount of time to sell it to us, and then it becomes something you're not allowed to have. I'm not talking about, you know, your regular sane guns. I'm talking about the things that can kill 30 people in a few seconds. there is no debate on earth that would convince me that is needed in a civilian population. So that is what we have to attack. And we attack that, you will notice a steep decline, like you've noticed in other parts of the world that have done just that. It's a simple enough thing. Yeah, there'll still be Looney Tunes out there that will do things. The effect will be less. It'll be harder for them to get their hands on it in the first place. And those steps do make a difference.
I like your idea of the buyback. I think it should be an inflated price, and then and for that specific model, or maybe models of this lethality, so to speak, and then split that cost and maybe give half of those inflated prices to schools, so that gun owners are contributing to education at the same time, as a nod to the places where these things occur. And to institutions that desperately need funding in the beginning, you know, in the first place, so that these kids have futures to be excited about.
Okay, unfortunately, the calls are coming in now, but as we mentioned, we have an abbreviated show because of this last-minute lacrosse game, so we can't take any of the calls. I'm sorry. Try to hold the passion till next week, when hopefully we have an hour. You can also write to us. You can put your fury into a keyboard and write to otw@2600.com and let us know why we're wrong or why we're correct. Who knows? We'd love to hear from you. Let's keep the dialogue going. It's really, really important. I want to go out with an amazing piece from years ago. I mentioned Scotland was one of the countries. They had a school massacre once, and they dealt with it. And this... benefit CD came out shortly afterwards as well. What's particularly stirring about this piece is that it applies so immensely to the current situation. They even have the number the same, 17. So it's worth listening to. It's worth applying today. It's worth learning from the lessons of other places. And it's worth taking a good long look at who we are, what we're doing, and why. For Off the Walls, Emmanuel, for Kyle.
Good night.
Take care.
Evening comes and light is fading, and your heart is heavy from the tears. Lift up your eyes and look to heaven, where 17 new stars have appeared. They shine their light down upon us, the message of their love is clear. Lost familiar voices softly whispering in the wind and pleading that this time we will hear. Throw these guns away, throw these guns away, they've caused this world too much pain. Let our old friends play in a safer day. Say the bands of Dunblane. We tore a petal in the barn. Seas between us, great hero, send our line sign. Throw these guns away, throw these guns away, they've caused this world too much pain. Let the children play, let the children. Travels, we can ensure that no other town must bear more lost familiar voices softly whispering in the wind and pleading, this time we will hear. Throw these guns away, throw these guns away. They've caused this world too much pain. Let the children play, let the children play, for the bands of Dunblane. Throw these guns away, throw these guns away. They've caused this world too much.
I'm Social Security Commissioner Michael Astrew.
And I'm Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Every 2 minutes, U.S. government receives an identity theft complaint.
Don't let criminals take your money. Never give your Social Security number or bank account information to anyone unless you initiated contact.
Treasury, Social Security, VA, and other government agencies will never contact you by phone, email, or text for this information.
Watch your accounts carefully.
Don't be a victim. Visit stopfraud.gov or call 877-ID-THEFT to learn more.
The planting of trees means improved water quality, resulting in less runoff and erosion. This allows more recharging of the groundwater supply, wooded areas help prevent the transport of sediment and chemicals into streams. Trees can boost the market value of your home by an average of 6 or 7%. Landscaping, especially with trees, can increase property values as much as 20%.
The net cooling effect of a young, healthy tree is equivalent to 10 room-size air conditioners operating 20 hours a day.
Did you know trees can add value to your home, help cool your home and neighborhood, break the cold winds to lower your heating costs, and provide food for wildlife? So plant a tree. It will help you and everyone else.
This message brought to you by the students of Murphy Junior High School.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Laval Stadium on the campus of Stony Brook University. This is Stony Brook Seawolves men's lacrosse. The men take on the Hofstra Pride into the traditional Long Island rivalry, and we'll be bringing you all the action here at 90.1 FM and also 107.3 as usual. I'm Matt Mankiewicz. Skylar Gilbert will be joining me in just a few. But this is a story right now between two teams struggling to get their first win. Stony Brook lost their first two games of the season, and Hofstra lost their first three, and Hofstra lost their first two. And Hofstra lost a couple of tough ones to ranked opponents, in particular Villanova, one of them, losing that one 7-2 on Saturday, and then losing 9-7 at Ohio State. Ohio State ranked 6th at the time, Villanova ranked 7th or 8th, depending on which poll you follow. A lot of developments in lacrosse this weekend for you America East fans out there. First of all, for the first time ever in the history of the America East Conference, the America East is both number one in men's and women's lacrosse. Stony Brook Seawolves women, of course, rising to number one thanks to an overtime loss by the Maryland Terrapins to the North Carolina Tar Heels. They had a dominant win over the weekend. And Albany is number one on the men's side. Another team that you don't usually see in the rankings, Vermont. They are ranked 14th, depending on which poll you follow. And right now, they are the biggest threat to Albany in the American East Conference. Seawolves, on the other hand, their primary concern, getting their act together now in the non-conference schedule. You can make the argument that non-conference games don't really mean much to the Seawolves right now because their in-conference performance matters a lot more. Taking a look ahead, they do have this game against Hofstra, then they go to Fairfield, then they host Virginia next week, then the conference schedule starts day after St. Patrick's Day at UMBC. Both teams struggling offensively. Seawolves doing a little bit better. They did, of course, reach double figures against Brown. However, they dropped a tough one to Penn State, 15-8, and a very tight one home against Sacred Heart to start the season, 11-9. So the Seawolves can score some goals. Hofstra, on the other hand, they've scored a total of 9 goals in 2 games. And anytime you score 2 goals, it's extremely rare. They hadn't done that in over 10 years. And they did lose to Villanova by a 7-2 score. Scoring 2 goals in lacrosse. Hey, Stony Brook shut out Albany once many, many years ago. Seems like an eternity considering they lost 8 straight to them. But that's a story for later on in the year. Right now, or later on in the month, I should say, on March 31st, they will be at Albany to take on the Great Danes. And who knows what will happen in the meantime. But the important things you need to know right now is that the Seawolves are a young team. Jack Walsh, a freshman, had 5 points in his debut in the starting lineup against Brown. And he put away 2 goals and had 3 assists. Rylan Reese, 13th in the nation, causing 2 turnovers per game. And when he's on his game, the Seawolves get back into it. They actually got within 2 goals of Penn State in that second game of the season down in Happy Valley. But Penn State went on a 6-1 run to put it away and never looked back. But I'll be calling that number 17 a lot. If I'm calling it a lot, that means the Seawolves are in good shape. Otherwise, they could be in for some trouble. Owen Daly has scored 2 goals in 2 of the team's 3 games this season. He only had two career goals prior to that. Chris Pickle Jr. has scored in all three games this year, had two against Brown. Corey Vangenhoven, number 40, put away two goals and assisted two more against Brown. So, again, the Seawolves can score. The defense has been a problem, though. Six freshmen have seen the field for the Seawolves this season. Ryan Erler in goal, Patrick Cashaw at midfield, Jack Walsh, as we mentioned, at attack, and Danny Cassidy on D. And another accolade for Reese. He is now part of Team Canada. He's been named to that roster ahead of the 2018 World Championships. And the Seawolves, like we said, were weeks away from the conference schedule kicking in, but they were picked to finish second in the America East, and right now Vermont is making a little bit of an argument for themselves. Seawolves have had problems containing their opponents as they go on runs. Brown had six unanswered after Seawolves scored scored the first goal of the game, rather, on Saturday. However, they tried to get things going in the third, just like they did against Penn State, could not. On the other hand, Jimmy Yanes on the Hofstra side leads Hofstra in scoring with three goals on the year. That's one-third their total output. Ryan Tierney, who's the son of Coach Seth Tierney, who's a guy that we're going to be talking a lot about, number 43, he has two goals and two assists. Kyle Gallagher is their photo specialist, leads the team in ground balls with eight. And Jack Concannon is another guy we'll be talking about a lot in the cage. 600% percentage, eight goals against. Overall, Hofstra leads the series 5-3. Way back in 2004 in a game run on WUSB, Stony Brook took the first meeting 9-6. Last year, the Pride came through 11-9 in Hempstead, back and forth, as we said. Last win, 2016, Hofstra was then ranked 12th, 13-5 was the score, and that was at Laval Stadium. But this is the first time the two teams have met with neither of them nationally ranked since 2007. That's 11 years ago. It's been a while since these two teams have struggled out of the gate. Hofstra is known for their slow starts in recent years. Seawolves, on the other hand, have been known to make hay while the sun shines in the non-conference schedule. And people are starting to get concerned about the Seawolves and what they will be up to this year. The women, on the other hand, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in greater detail, but they have been running roughshod over everybody. That will hand it off to the PA announcer for the intros, the lineup intros, and the national anthem.
Visiting Hofstra Pride and your Stony Brook Seawolves. And please turn your attention to midfield as Stony Brook Athletic Director Sean Holman would like to present Brian Crown, the Director of Operations for the Green Turtle, with tonight's honorary game ball. At this time, we ask you to please rise and wear your caps as we honor the United States of America and those who protect our freedoms with the playing of our national anthem.
Ready to go here at Laval Stadium.
After five.
Of Of course, this is a longtime home for Seawolves Athletics, WUSB Stony Brook. I'm Matt Mankiewicz. Skylar Gilbert will be joining me in just a few. But we'll hand off to the public address now to lead the lineups once again.
Number 19, Dominic Flowers. Number 23, Dylan Alderman. Number 30, James Irving. Defenseman, Matt Irwin. Connor Griffin. Number 24, John Puckerman. And number 27, Brett Huston. And goal for Hofstra, number 12, Jack McMahon. The foul by coach by Seth Tierney. He was assisted by Kevin Winterstein, J.P. Brazzo, and Brandon Mangan. And now, here are the starters for your Stony Brook Seawolves. At the tack, from Miller Place, New York, number 7, Jack Walsh. From Ron Hockenheim, New York, number 22, Tom Fong. And from St. Louis Spring, Pennsylvania, number 3, Connor Howell. Brothers from Fort Mills, North Carolina, number 40, Corey Vanderhoof. From Windsor, Ontario, number 91, Patrick Castle. And from Newport, New York, number 15, Chris Pickett. Defenseman, from Windsor, New York, number 99, Danny Cassidy. From Manorville, New York, number 15, Justin Huber. And from Fort Oakland, British Columbia, number 17, Ryan Reese. Big round from the Seawolves, from Holbrook, New York, number 47, Michael Collinson. The assistant coach is Stony Brook by Craig Gibson, Harry Cobb, and Jim Moore. And his first from the Seawolves, in his seventh season, is Jim Neighbor.
So, midfield for the face-off here as we get underway at Laval Stadium. Stony Brook Seawolves, Hofstra Pride. Both teams looking for their first win of the season. Riley Forte, your FOGO specialist for the Hofstra Pride. As the team set. And we are underway on the Kyle Abdella Teaforth to face off. And now it will be a Seawolf possession. No correction on that. Hofstra will win it. And they will get going here as we get underway. Hang out in the neutral zone. Now passing over to the left side. That's Dylan McIntosh. Working the excess, Jimmy Yanes. Coming out to the far side. And then going clockwise and out to midfield, Dylan Alderman. Alderman working off the pick, driving, passing to his right. Shot taken and a score for Hofstra. As 46 seconds in, the Pride get on the board. Sweeping shot down low. I believe that was Yanes on that one. Nope, it was Tierney. Ryan Tierney, as we expected, the coach's son. One of the top scorers for Hofstra his entire career here. And Hofstra leads it 1-0. Skyler is here. We'll get him set up on the air. And working the face-off for the Seawolves, that was actually Cole Anderson, long stick. Seawolves having trouble holding on to it in the Hofstra zone, and it will go to the Pride. Mark Ellis on the Hofstra side, trying to run the clear. Gets it back to his goalie. That's Jack Concannon, starting for the Pride. And now bringing it in will be number 27, Brett Osman. Gets it over to a midfielder. Gets it in Dylan Alderman. And Now it's in the hands of the attackman behind the net. Coming out to the right side, Alderman. Through the midfielders. And now in the hands of Dominic Pryor, looking to drive, going to his right, working around to the X now and out to the near side, Jimmy Yanes. Even with the net, Yanes will drive. Come back to the net, look for a wraparound. He does try it. And a nice save by the Seawolves goalie. That's Bollinger in there. And now coming back in, putting it back in. The Pride get on the board one more time.
For the Pride.
Yeah.
He's a freshman. That's his third goal of the season.
There we go. Pryor now gets a goal for the Pride. And again, we're barely 2 minutes in, and the Seawolves have seen this before.
They have, and Hofstra scored two goals before the Seawolves have even gotten possession in the offensive zone. So it's just a testament to the midfield play by Hofstra so far, getting the loose balls, and the offense has put up the goals.
Abdelatif will work the face-off once again, and the struggles will continue as Hofstra comes up with it one more time. Kyle Gallagher, the Fogo, will get out of there, do the foe and the go, face-off, get-off, and let the offense set up. Once again, Alderman. Passing to his left side, Pryor. Over to the far left, the left side of the box, McIntosh. McIntosh will get to the X, and that's Jimmy Yanes. Now out to the far side, working all the way around, out to the top, to Tierney. And then he'll kick it back out to Pryor. Going to the right side again and around the X. Coming back once again to Yanes. Yanes still behind the net to the left side of it. Working off a pick now, isolating himself a little bit. Going to make a move to the far side of the net. Runs into a double team. Seawolves defense a little bit tighter than we've seen them. Coming back. We see number 9, Bryce Tolmie, getting a touch. Although the ball gets knocked out of bounds, and Yanes will bring it back in. 12 minutes left, 11:59 on the clock. 2-0 Pride. Stony Brook Seawolves and Hofstra Pride. The great Long Island rivalry. Hofstra leads this series 5-3. Working out to the far left side, that's Yanes. Now Pryor back to Yanes. Pass up top. That's again Tierney. Tierney gets wrapped up and knocked to the ground, and the ball gets knocked free. Good defense by the Seawolves there. Seawolves in transition. See what they can do here. See if they can catch Hofstra flat-footed. Ball out to the far side. And it comes back to number 91, the freshman, Patrick Kashaw. He'll take it to the right elbow.
They'll reset now. That was all set up by the huge defensive play by junior Justin Purukal. The big hit, forced the turnover, and now the Seawolves are clicking on offense.
Vangenhoven, about 10 yards out from the box. He'll drift to the left wing. Coming back out to the X, now back to Vangenhoven on the left side. Back up to the top now, Connor Howell, the junior attackman. Vangenhoven has it once again. Seawolves taking their time on the left side. Being patient. Pass. Looked like a pass attempted. Connor Howell tried to find the man down low, but Hofstra picks it off, takes it away. Hofstra looking to get out of their own zone.
Wasn't sure about that pass attempt by the Seawolves. Looked like he was passing it through three Hofstra defenders in front.
Not a wise move at all, and Hofstra will settle in. Dylan Alderman passing to the right side to Pryor, who already has a goal on the evening. And they work around through the X to the left side, and that's Dylan McIntosh. Back up to the top, now to Alderman. Alderman about 15 yards out of the box. Now he'll drive. Drift to the left side. Pass, bounced, but fielded by Jimmy Yanes, and the attackman will take it and then bring it back up to the top again for Pryor. Pryor dodging left. Pryor firing, not a great shot. And Bollinger able to handle it. And the Seawolves go back the other way, but Hawks are putting pressure on. Tierney putting some pressure on in there over on the left side. Now Reese has it, long stick mid. He gets it to a short stick, Owen Daly. Owen Daly was able to get rid of it at midfield, and now the Seawolves offense will set. Tom Holland on the near side. Coming back to the X, that is number 7, Jack Walsh, the attackman. He'll come all the way out to the far corner. Now in the hands of the midfielders on the left side. Inverting. Believe that was Daly, and now it comes all the way out to the near side. Once again to Kashok, and now up to the top to Wayne White. Wayne White driving, making a right turn, coming back out to the right elbow. Through the midfielders once again, out to the left side. Is that Vangenhoven? No, it's hard to see who that is, but right up to the top and over on the right side again, Wayne White. Passing to the X once again. Looking for a wraparound opportunity. And drawing a flag. Seawolves will play on.
Also got a little rambunctious there. Seawolves.
That was Cashaw. Yeah, Cashaw drew the flag. Now the Seagulls will play on until Hasha touches the ball or it goes in the net. One or the other. Shot taken. Another flag.
Big opportunity for the Seagulls here. As two flags come down, and Stony Brook will head to the power play looking to cut this thing down.
Seagulls will take the man advantage and maybe even two as we wait for the official verdict. There's a slash and a hold. So, you got two Hofstra players taking a knee. Number 48 on the Hofstra side, that's Mitch Kingsley. And number 27, Brett Osmond, the defenseman. So, you're going to be two men up for 30 seconds and one man up for one. Golden opportunity for the Seawolves to get back into this, down 2-0 with 8:13 left. We see the two-man-up unit. White out to the far side. Comes back to him up top. Going to his right now. That's Pickle. And now comes back out to White up top. Now the left side shot taken and blocked. Not out over the end line. The Seawolves will try it again with 37 seconds.
Big defensive play.
5 seconds left in the two-man-up. 37 seconds left in the one. And then Hasha plugging up the defense once again. And the Seawolves getting another shot blocked. This one, I believe that was Simons. Oh, correction on that. That was actually Kashaw, who was able to, was not able to get the shot off. And now he's going to apply some pressure as Walsh loses his stick. But Alderman able to complete the clear for the Hofstra Pride. 7:27 left in the first quarter. It's 2-0 Hofstra. Seawolves had a two-man advantage, not able to convert. And they have 5 seconds left on it. And Hofstra will kill it.
Big missed opportunity for the Seawolves there. Good defense by Hofstra, sitting deep with only four guys on defense. Taylor Griffin, the defenseman, made a couple big plays, and Hofstra was able to keep Seawolves off the board.
Hofstra offense spread out right now. Tierney. Quick pass to Pryor up top. Pryor driving. Over to his left, that is Yanes. Coming around to the far side once again. And once again, it is going to be Alderman taking a shot wide right as he was on the run going from right to left. And Hofstra will try it again. 6:38 remaining in the quarter. First quarter action. 2-0 Hofstra. Seawolves have had a couple of possessions, but they have come for naught so far. Yanes on the left side through to Alderman. Now on the right side, Pryor. Coming out to the X, and then back out to Yanes on the left side. Alderman and Pryor working the restraining line. Now Tierney, that is. Tierney changing hands, going to his right hand, looking for an opportunity there. He draws a double team and a flag as Hofstra plays on. Seawolves will go man down, but Alderman now has the ball for the Pride about 5 yards out from the restraining line.
Looks like that flag was on Pugel for the Seawolves.
So with the one-handed cradle, Alderman gets pushed out to the perimeter. Now they'll work it through the X once again and come back out to the top. Making a move on net, that is Tierney. Tierney about even with the net, being pushed out by Pugel. Tierney taking a shot and misses wide right, and now the ball is still full forward, and Plaster comes up with it again. And remember, they still have a flag outstanding. They bring it back out to the top. Tierney, Pryor, now back to Tierney again.